Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't forget, you can go get the Civic Media app for free from your favorite app store and take us with you wherever you may be heading over the holidays. Welcome back, Anya, after a little bit of a holiday break. It was lovely to see you this weekend as well.
It was good to see you too.
Big fun. I had quite the relaxing Thanksgiving. It was the first time in a while that I didn't have to cook anything, and my family wasn't cooking or prepping. We went to a downtown restaurant. They served like a family style Thanksgiving dinner. We had leftovers. It was fabulous. So hope everybody out there in the listening audience had a safe and relaxing, enjoyable holiday weekend. We've got a lot of cool things coming up on the show. But first, we got to start with a new show that's going out across the Civic Media Radio Network. Pete Schwabba has joined the Civic family. He's going to be with you nightly across the network from 8 to 10 p.m. with a new show called Nightlight. You're not going to want to miss that. A little bit of a lighter touch after a day's worth of news. We all need that. But coming up on this show, this Thursday, I'm going to be joined at the 6:30 hour by Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman from Raised in Wisco fame. We're going to talk a little bit about the fall and winter sporting here in Wisconsin. Though I am a city slicker by most accounts, I have spent my fair share of time in both snowshoes and in tents and in the northern environs of this state. So that's going to be a bunch of fun. But really excited to share with you all that this coming Monday, December 4th, I'm going to be joined for the entire hour by Princeton sociology professor Catherine Eden. She is a preeminent scholar, basically about poverty in the United States. And she and two co-authors just had a piece that came out a couple days ago on the 24th. In the Daily Beast called Segregation Academies Show Us the Ugly Side of School Vouchers. Quite provocative. She's written a book that got a lot of press a few years back called $2 a Day, The Art of Living on Virtually Nothing in America. You're not going to want to miss my discussion with Professor Eden. We're going to spend some time digging into voucher programs. Of course, this is especially poignant for the state of Wisconsin because Milwaukee Public Schools had the first voucher program in the country. Now, since that time in the 90s, the voucher program, not just in Milwaukee, but statewide, has steadily expanded. And that has created some perhaps intended, some would say unintended results. We're going to talk about that with Professor Eden. It's especially important because in this last gubernatorial cycle, as part of Republican candidate Tim Michels' campaign platform, he was advocating for what is known as universal vouchers, which are basically anybody gets taxpayer money to send their child to whatever school they wish, including, of course, religious education programs. And I am personally so excited about talking to Professor Eden because unless you work in a public school system, and I would also venture to say, unless you work in a large urban public school system, you may not have a line of sight onto what vouchers, again, intended or not, may have wrought in terms of public school funding and what our student bodies look like in public school systems. So put it on your calendar next Monday, a week from today. I'm going to spend the entire hour with Princeton sociologist Professor Catherine Eden. My thanks to her. Also next week, I'm going to spend 2 days following my time with Professor Eden talking about the Supreme Court's shadow docket. I've been talking about the fact that I want to do a deep dive to explain why it's actually very different now in this iteration of the court than it has ever been, and why we're feeling socially and as Americans writ large, such whiplash with these non-decisions that come from the Supreme Court that seem to have these really huge immediate impacts on people's lived day-to-day lives without there actually being any vote tallies. We don't know who voted for what coming from the shadow docket or opinion writing by the Supreme Court. So next week, I'm going to spend Tuesday and Wednesday. It's going to take us a little bit of time. I won't do the whole hours both days on it, but the bulk of the show will be spent explaining why it's so different now and why everybody, no matter which side of the bread you like to butter it on, Republican, Democrat, Independent, purple, pink, polka dotted, we should care about how the Supreme Court is impacting everybody's day-to-day life and if and whether we can actually hold them accountable to any extent. That's an issue that everybody cares about. Next Thursday, I'm going to be joined by Legal Aid Society Executive Director Colleen Foley and then by Civic Media's very own Terry Barr to do what's local and overlooked in the state of Wisconsin next week. And then on Monday, December 11th, so much going on here in the Maggie Dawn Show, we're going to have judicial candidate for the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, Branch 43, Rochelle Johnson-Bent, joining the show. So, with all of that housekeeping now dutifully out of the way, Anya, I wanted to start after this holiday break with something maybe a little bit lower test. And that is, today is the apex of November's full moon. It is beautiful. It kind of has an orangey yellowy tint, and it's actually referred to as the beaver moon for a whole number of reasons that I will explain in just a moment. And I just thought some of the wonky stuff about this was really interesting. This is coming from Dr. Noah Petro, the chief of NASA's Planetary Geology, Geophysics, and Geochemistry Lab. Dumb guy, clearly. Might not know much about what he's talking about. What's going on right now is called libration. It's the slight movement of the moon that changes the angle at which we see the moon from the one side that's facing the Earth. And that's why it does look different from month to month. The November moon, notable for all kinds of indigenous reasons, meaning one of the reasons that it's referred to as the beaver moon is that some of our First Nations folks from this continent referred to it as a beaver moon in their native languages, because this is when you would see a lot of beavering activity by beavers to prepare for the wintertime. Other First Nation peoples refer to it as a digging moon because literally animals are digging to prepare for the winter hibernation session. And lastly, some First Nation peoples refer to it as the cold moon, which I thought, oh, so appropriate, given this especially cold snap that we're all rolling into for the next few days. And here's what I got a real big kick out of. This is coverage from CNN. Here's Dr. Petro, again, this very, very, very smart guy, geophysics, planetary geology, geochemist from NASA. Here's what he said when he was talking to CNN today. When people look at the moon, I hope they first take in that it's the same moon that their grandparents, great-grandparents, and generations before us have seen. For millennia, humans have looked to the moon, and it's looked similar for all of human history, which I thought was an awful thoughtful, very unwonky observation from a geophysicist from NASA. The next full moon will be on December 26th. So enjoy the cold brilliance of this digging cold beaver moon on November 27th today, everyone.
And watch out for were-beavers. I feel like if we were ever going to see them, the full moon of the beaver moon would be the time.
Right. It just seems appropriate that they would be out and about. I would not want to mess with a beaver. Personally, it's like badgers, no. Beavers, raccoons. No, thank you. But not. So I've got a question for everybody to ponder. I'm going to be turning to Mitt Romney's new book called A Reckoning at the Bottom of the Hour. We've got some sound. He was interviewed about it. And there's also been a bit of reporting, New York Times, WAPO, that there's just a flood of consistent criticism of the former President Donald Trump coming out from basically some of his closest advisors and other Republicans. And so my question to everyone is, do you think any of that matters? In listening to what former senator and former GOP presidential candidate Romney said in this interview, there was a certain almost resignation, sadness with which he is observing the current state of the GOP. And much of the commentary out there is also saying, many of us, notably John Kelly, longest serving chief of staff for Donald Trump, came out and said, I've come out and criticized him. Bill Barr is criticizing him. All these people are criticizing him. And it gets play in the media for a half a day and it has no impact on the polls. Do you think any of this at any time will have any impact? 844-967-2789. I'm going to be turning to that at the bottom of the hour. I don't really think it has had any impact. We talk about these things on talk radio and civic media because I think it's really important. But so the first part of the question is, do you think any of this litany of former advisors, former cabinet members, members of his own GOP criticizing him and basically saying, not only do I disagree with him, but the man is unfit to be president and he's a danger to America. Not only does it make any difference, but how do you rate the criticisms of the party that you support from other members therein, right? In other words, do you give that higher weight when you're assessing candidates? 844-967-2789. When we come back, Tony Evers, not just a Warren Spahn fan, but apparently he wants a private email address on the state email servers. I'm going to talk about it when we come back because transparency and openness in government is important. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. She is Anastasia Esther, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to join our conversation this afternoon, 844-967-2789. That's talk or text at 844-967-2789. The bottom of the hour, I'm going to be taking your calls. We're going to be talking about this parade of former Trump allies that are now very openly criticizing the former president, both in writing and in interviews, from stages, in op-eds. And my question is, does any of it make any difference? Is it too little, too late? What do you think when people within the party that is your preference come out and criticize your own candidates? Does that weigh on you? Does that factor into your assessment of candidates or current sitting elected officials? And I think lingering behind all of that is it even the GOP anymore? Right? Because if some of the former luminaries of the party are saying this guy's unfit and nobody cares, what does that say about the party itself? I'm not quite sure. Your comments and thoughts, welcome. When we get to the bottom of the hour, 844-967-2789. But I wanted to share this with you because I was a little bit aghast when this broke. This news was broken yesterday by Wisconsin Right Now. Well, Wisconsin Right Now is what it sounds like. It's a right-leaning media outlet. But this was some pretty good reporting. Governor Tony Evers has a different email address, what Wisconsin Right Now calls a ghost email address, that he has been using to communicate with high-level administration officials and his cabinet. It's not the generic email that you find when you go to the governor's website, right? And it is not just a private ghost email address. Those are all, you know, he probably has a private email address on Gmail or whatever, and he emails his grandkids. That's not what I'm talking about. This is a .gov, an at Wisconsin.gov email address that the governor has. And the name in the email address is Warren.Spahn. If you're not a huge baseball fan like I am, Warren Spahn was a Milwaukee Braves Hall of Famer. Evers is a big baseball fan, big known lover of Warren Spahn. This is his private, unknown to the public previously, email address, Warren.Spahn at Wisconsin.gov. Say what now? So let me just paint this picture, and I'm going to make kind of arguments on both sides. We have open records laws in the state of Wisconsin. You send in an open records request to a government jurisdiction. You say, I would like all of the email communications between X and Y dates between this group of people that use the word Beaver Moon, okay? And they run a search and they turn those over unless there's some exception. It's an attorney-client privileged email. It's got like a social security number in it or things like that. Well, how has the governor's office been responding to open records requests that seek email and other electronic communications between the government or between the governor, excuse me, and Jane or John Doe about issue blankety blank if he's got this special private email address? There's a serious transparency problem there. Because if you don't know that the email address exists and you don't say, I would like the Warren Spahn address emails, has the office of the Wisconsin governor been including those emails in response to open records requests, which I would think they would need to if the open records requests reasonably reaches those emails, notwithstanding the fact that it's not his public facing email. So a bit concerned am I. I have not heard of this before. Most of the time when you have political principals, meaning the CEOs, a county executive, a mayor, what have you, they actually don't read or send emails themselves at all. They just don't, because they get too many of them. They have staff that does that. Now, Wisconsin right now submitted an open records request specifically asking for this Warren Spahn email back in September. It took until November 22nd for the Department of Administration in Evers' administration to respond, and they denied the request. They went, oh, it's too broad, take too long to get these together, which again seems a little problematic to me. And they indicated that there's over 17,000 quote records responsive to the request, meaning sent to or from this Warren Spahn email. Again, gee whiz, what's in those? Seems to me to be a very appropriate question. Now, of course, Wisconsin right now, as well as the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, which is a right adjacent, a GOP adjacent law firm, are very up in arms, which you have to call a little like, for real, y'all? Because this is the same GOP where Gableman destroyed records and was like, what do you mean the open records apply to me? You know, this is Voss who tried to change and did to some extent change Wisconsin open records law to make the legislature less susceptible to open records requests, right? So it's incredibly disingenuous and two-faced for the Wisconsin GOP to be raising a stink about this. But so what? What are you doing, Governor Evers? If you want to conduct public business on a public email address, that should be included in your responses to open records requests seeking the governor's communications about XYZ or ABC. I'm simply distressed and a little bit aghast at this whole development. Let me read you the statement that came from the governor's office today. The governor's non-public official direct email address is used to facilitate, excuse me, I lost a little bit of the statement, but they basically say, if I remember it correctly, it's used to facilitate direct communication with his leaders within government. Making, and then this is the direct quote, making this email address publicly available would significantly hinder the governor's ability to communicate and work efficiently. There is minimal harm to the public interest, given that there are numerous public means to communicate with the office of the governor. That's not the issue. The issue are open records requests and whether or not you included this email when people submitted open requests to the office of the governor. Inquiring minds want to know, and the governor just handed the GOP in Wisconsin a whole lot of ammunition to claim that he isn't living up to the spirit of the law that, in my opinion, Democrats in this state have long, long defended based on the principles of openness, transparency, and accountability in government. This is not a good idea. Let's not do ghost email addresses in government. How about that? Listen, when we come back, I'm going to turn to Mitt Romney and what he's got to say about the former president. Join our conversation, 844-967-2789, here on this Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. You are listening to the Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. So just before we went to break, I want to try to close a loop here. We were talking about this non-public Wisconsin.gov email address that Wisconsin Right Now reported on yesterday being used by Governor Evers. The Journal Sentinel has subsequently followed up and made clear that Scott Walker also used such an email address. It wasn't as creative as Warren.spawn. It was Kevin.walker. Now, the reason that an elected official would do this is, yeah, they get crushed from constituent emails. The concern and question that I have, and I'll note that Governor Walker's Attorney General Brad Schimmel, now apparently a candidate for the Supreme Court, discouraged this practice. Because if you don't, whether it's Scott Walker or Governor Evers, if you do not include that email when you are responding to open records request, to me, that is a serious breach of public trust. Before I get to Mitt Romney, wanted to take the call from Gene in Eau Claire, who wanted to comment on this issue. Hi, Gene. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hi. Great show, as usual. You do an outstanding job, Maggie Dawn. You know, first of all, you know, I'm biased because I followed Governor Evers for a long time, and I also followed Scotty Walker, you know, who didn't send anything by print so he'd get caught in anything, as was proven in the past. I watched, you know, followed him real close. Now, Governor Evers, you know, maybe has to correct us. However, whenever I've left messages for the governor or asked questions or anything, I got responses, you know, from somebody in his office, follow-up, and he's been very kind and courteous. And I know a lot of people do emails, and maybe he's waiting for something to come in. But I understand, you know, the issue with it. But God darn it, when you get somebody like Will that this is a big issue for and nobody else, I find this extremely interesting because, I mean, you know, he's been upfront, honest, good governor. Maybe has to change his practice, but I don't see anything nefarious because if you look at his history, he's a workhorse, not a show horse, and keeps his nose to the grindstone, and he seems to me to have been a pretty honest guy working for us, not for big corporations and, you know, other types of people. So that's just my opinion. And if somebody in a party to told me, you know, like was trying to influence my opinion on somebody, I wouldn't want it. I just ignore it. So anyway, thank you very much, Maggie. I learned from you guys and a lot of different studies and things. So keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jean. Some more detailed coverage coming from the Journal Sentinel. Katie Ignatowski, who was I believe a legal advisor to Scott Walker, is quoted in the Journal Sentinel as effectively defending the practice and saying that in response to open records requests, by her understanding, both former Governor Scott Walker and current Governor Tony Evers provide the emails in response to open records requests. So even if a requester isn't asking or naming that private email address, they are actually providing the records. That is what is critical here. Absolutely critical. A representative of Governor Evers said in response to a Journal Sentinel inquiry, in fact, in every instance in which our office has provided responsive records in response to an open records request, we have explicitly made requesters aware of these email addresses and the purpose of their redaction in providing responsive records. What they're saying is they're blacking out what is that private, non-public facing email address, but they're actually providing the records. That's good. And if that is the case, then I say Governor Evers has fully met the spirit of the Wisconsin open records law. If those emails are also searched and produced in response to open records requests that would, under any reasonable construction of the request, include those private server emails, then he's doing it. Then he's complying with not only the letter, but also the spirit of the Wisconsin open records law. But it's certainly interesting to me, and perhaps as the story develops and you've got more folks weighing in here, that you've got Will and Wisconsin right now claiming that this is some egregious violation of the Wisconsin open records law, when in some of the most important moments in our state's recent political history, namely and probably most prominently, special counsel Michael Gableman's, quote, investigation boondoggle into election integrity issues, where he openly in court said, yeah, we were destroying records. So the hypocrisy here, the two-facedness of the criticism coming from Will and Wisconsin right now seems quite acute. And again, coverage is literally updating right before we were getting on the show this afternoon. So thanks for letting me learn with all of you on this really important story. If you want to comment on this or our next topic, which we're going to turn to now, which is Mitt Romney's commentary and his new book, A Reckoning, on the former president, Donald J. Trump. This is a bit of a long clip, but I think it's necessary to me to listen to the whole thing, because Mitt Romney in this clip to me sounds like a man who has lost hope for the GOP and the Republican Party and cannot recognize the party before him. Anya, let's go ahead and listen to Mitt Romney discussing his recent book, A Reckoning, in a recent interview.
Do you recognize your own party?
You know, I'm at a tiny, tiny slice of my party now. I mean, I don't, in many respects, have a home in the Republican Party today. The party is much more populist. The party has attracted all sorts of folks who used to be Democrats and independents. They've come into the Republican Party drawn by a message of populism and in some respects, resentment and anger. And I'm still a Republican because I want to bring us back to the kinds of values that have allowed us to succeed in the past, but we'll see where we go in the future.
You are quoted in the book as saying, a very large portion of my party really doesn't believe in the Constitution. How did you come to that damning conclusion?
Well, when former President Trump said we should set aside the Constitution and reappoint him as president, why, you had Republicans cheer that. It's like, wait a second. This is the leader of our party saying we should put aside the Constitution. How can you believe you're following the Constitution if that's the case? It's an outrage. It violates the peaceful transfer of power, which has been characteristic of our country from the very earliest days. So, I think the evidence has been in pretty plain view for people across the country.
So how is it that Donald Trump, the leading candidate for the Republican Party for president?
I don't begin to be able to understand how it is so many people can accept the dishonesties that have been spoken by Donald Trump. I don't know how it is people go along with that, but they do. And I think in some respects, it's like, well, there's our team and their team. And we're going to cheer with whatever our team says and say that we believe it.
No way you'll run for president in 2024?
And I can't imagine any circumstance. Perhaps if Godzilla comes in and removes all the other candidates and so forth, but other than Godzilla stepping in, no, I'm not running for president, not giving it any thought.
Who do you like in the Republican field?
Anybody. I'd be happy to support virtually any one of the Republicans, maybe not Vivek, but the others that are running would be acceptable to me, and I'd be happy to vote for them. I'd be happy to vote for a number of the Democrats, too. I mean, it would be an upgrade from, in my opinion, from Donald Trump and perhaps also from Joe Biden. Look, I like President Biden. I find him a great
And he goes on and he talks about you got two old guys running, but the meat of what Mitt Romney's got to say here is pretty outstanding, which is, I don't recognize my party anymore. I'm not really even a part of the party. He begins with, I'm a tiny sliver. He also doesn't like Vivek. I love that zip. He just got that in there under the wire. And he says at the end, I would rather vote for some Democrats than Donald Trump. This is a former GOP presidential candidate. Truly shocking. Troy from Mount Horeb, you've been very, very patient, my friend. What say you this afternoon?
That's okay, because this is what I wanted to comment on anyways. I didn't think to his supporters anybody saying anything, they're just going to be looked at as traitors. And his supporters are ride or die with him no matter what. And I'm hoping that either he gets in, gets the nomination, and enough, unlike Romney, where I'm not voting for that guy, or he doesn't get the nomination, and enough of his supporters are saying, I'm not voting, the nomination was fixed, or I'm not voting for that person, and they sit out. And either way, that'll help Biden win the election in the end.
Thanks for the call, Troy. I appreciate it. CJ, keep it above the line. Go ahead.
I don't quite know what that means, but hi, Maggie. It was nice meeting you at the remote.
Indeed. How you doing?
I am good, thank you. I'm surprised that, you know, you're so worried about the Republicans and, you know, who's running for the Republicans when your party denied Robert Kennedy Jr. even to run as a Democrat. Now he's going to run as a third party. We're probably looking at Joe Manchin running.
But let me just ask you, CJ, if I may, we can talk about Robert Kennedy, who's a crackpot. You want to talk about somebody who trades on a family name. The only reason we're talking about him is because his last name is Kennedy. Those are topics for a different day. What I want to know is, does character matter? And how is it that the GOP is lining up behind a man who has ably demonstrated, according to Mitt Romney, a former presidential candidate of the party that I believe you vote for most often? Does character matter? How is it that this party has abandoned that as a standard?
Character does matter, but what matters more is results from the policies. And the policies that the President Trump had were successful. We weren't going into war. We weren't dealing with inflation and the border. And I could go on and on. Interest rates
Okay. So inflation actually started during Trump's presidency, and the fixins for it were already baked into the cake. That's part of the supply chain crisis. That's part of what COVID did. If character matters, then to any degree, it becomes a question to me how someone who argued that we can simply throw the Constitution out as per Mitt Romney is an acceptable candidate. I just, the moment that I'm observing here, and thanks so much for the call, CJ, I appreciate you listening and participating. The moment that I'm observing here is you've got a former presidential candidate saying that he would rather vote for some Democrats over Donald Trump because he is a danger to democracy. And that, I think, is just an incredibly extraordinary moment. So we're about to listen to a few important messages from civic media sponsors. When we come back, does any of this matter in the end? Or are folks just going to line up on the teams that they have assigned themselves to and vote that way, as Mitt Romney was explaining? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us for our last segment, 844-967-2789.
Can't you see? I'm calling. A guy like you should wear a warning.
And you should call us here on the Maggie Dawn Show, 844-967-2789. Rolling into the last segment of the day, we're talking about Mitt Romney's most recent book called Reckoning, his comments about the former president. Mitt Romney said it. I'd rather vote for some Democrats than Donald Trump. We've got some end sound, do we not, of the little trick. He went on this, the whole interview is quite lengthy. You can find it if you're interested. I would advise taking a listen on it. But here's just some of the end of this sound from Romney's interview.
Policies.
The subtitle of the book is Reckoning. Is there a reckoning in the Republican Party?
I don't know where the party stands. Well, the future of the Republican Party, I mean, it depends on whether Donald Trump gets elected president again. If Donald Trump gets elected president, and I give that at this stage like 50-50 odds, I think he's the prohibitive favorite to win the nomination. If he gets elected president, the party is Donald Trump. It's in every respect a reflection of his character. And I don't know how long it would take for us to shake that image. If he loses, of course, he'll say it was stolen, regardless of the circumstances. But if he loses, I think our party moves on. I don't know the direction it'll take, but I think it moves on to a different course.
I mean, we're at a moment, and I think, you know, to CJ's point, regardless of what you think of the efficacy or the preferability of Donald Trump's policies, and CJ and I could go down that rabbit hole for days, right? There's a question of when is the character of the candidate so reprehensible? When is his disregard for democratic values and principles, his disdain for the Constitution, for the rule of law, when is that an insurmountable objection? And what is unique? I hear from folks all the time, oh, Clinton was despicable too. Yeah, I think Bill Clinton was a man of low character, certainly low personal character. And he lied under oath. All that's true. But what you didn't see with Bill Clinton was the volume, the sheer number of former allies and advisors standing up and saying, unfit. Morally unfit, character-wise unfit from a democratic institutional perspective, unfit. And there's just reams of these people from Donald Trump's inner circle, whether you're talking about John Kelly, Mark Milley, Ty Cobb. The list goes on and on. The recent WAPO article was just last week. They talked to 16 different advisors, plus a whole cadre more who wouldn't go on the record because they're afraid of threats to their family. You can't criticize your former boss because you're afraid you and your family might come under physical threat. That seems to me to be a bit of a dark day and not analogous to any former president who has had moral failings or character failings or policy failings. This is different. But it seems to me, and I think you hear that in Mitt Romney's voice, this, I don't know what the GOP is anymore. And I don't want to be in a democracy where we just line up on, you know, on our various teams in the red and the blue and hurl insults at one another. Because it doesn't result in good policy, and it doesn't result in Americans having a renewed faith in our institutions. Whether you're talking about Congress, the presidency, the Supreme Court, the public approval ratings are at literally their lowest since we've been measuring these things. That's a problem. So to me, I don't think much of this has mattered so far. I look askance at many conservatives who said, oh, well, I'll serve because I'll save him from, and I'll save the country from his worst impulses. It does seem a bit of a little too late. Too little too late, excuse me. But there is still time. And those last months, I think, again, as Mitt Romney said, odds on, Donald Trump is the nominee for the GOP. But I think we have to have this fundamental conversation of whatever the preferability of conservative policies might be. Could a republic withstand another 4 years when the candidate is saying, I will weaponize the DOJ, I will only hire loyalists, personally loyal to me, when he's threatening judges and folks that work in the court system, whatever you think of the indictments? In other words, no respect for the rule of law. When is that too much? When is the republic more important than being a Republican? And I think Mitt Romney has summarized those concerns with aplomb. Tomorrow, I am going to be talking about a little bitty thing coming from a state Republican representative in the Assembly called Assembly Bill 641. They're talking about changing the rules around public libraries in a way that is truly alarming to me. You're not going to want to miss that. That's tomorrow. I'm going to start there. Assembly Bill 641. I'm also going to take a bit of a look at a couple of recent cases that deal with the Voting Rights Act. Because again, I think wherever you sit on the political spectrum, we want folks' votes to count if they are qualified electors. If they're constitutionally entitled to vote, the votes should count. We shouldn't be making it harder for people to vote. We should be making it easier for people to vote. And those are good things. So looking at these cases that are weakening potentially the Voting Rights Act will also be a subject of reflection tomorrow here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Don't forget this Thursday, I will be with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, the Raised in Wisco folks, talking about all things Wisconsin sporting. And next Monday, again, don't pencil it in, pen it in. You're going to hear from Princeton sociology professor Catherine Eden. We're going to talk about poverty in this country and what universal school vouchers actually mean. Thanks for listening to this cold weather, beaver, full moon, November 27th edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Be warm out there, everybody, and I'll see you tomorrow.